Hello and welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections podcast, Lockup Lowdown. The goal of this podcast is to provide listeners with information pertaining to all aspects of corrections, one issue or one topic at a time. I'm your host, DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. Today we're joined by CIT Program Manager Jim Kehoe, who will talk to us about Crisis Intervention Training, also known as CIT. Thanks for joining us, Jim.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So before we get started, would you please provide our listeners with a brief background of your corrections employment history?
I started in corrections in October of 2000 as a CO1 at SCI Mahanoy. I worked as a corrections officer for roughly 5 years, promoted to sergeant, and worked as a sergeant for about 10 years. At that time, I wanted to do a little bit more in corrections, so I went back to night school, and now I was a counselor for 3.5 years, a corrections counselor. And I was very excited when they asked me to be involved in the crisis intervention training program. So after adjuncting that for a while, they asked me if I would be interested in taking over the program. So now I work at the Department of Corrections Training Academy as the program manager for crisis intervention training.
Excellent. Thanks for that information. So let's get to the nitty-gritty of CIT. What is CIT? What's the history of it within the DOC?
Crisis intervention training is a de-escalation training which primarily focuses on mental illness in corrections, mentally ill individuals that are incarcerated. We've seen a huge influx of mentally ill incarcerated individuals with the closing of all the state hospitals. So when we first started in corrections, we weren't trained to deal with mental illness.
Right.
We were of the old mindset of just, you know, lock them up, make sure they eat, get them to yard. But there's so many more problems that we're dealing with now. And there was a need to teach people how to talk to inmates and actually have them be able to de-escalate those inmates before they come to a place where they act out, whether it be violent against staff or against each other. So CIT was created in 1987 in Memphis by Sam Cochran. That's when it became a program, and it was to battle police officers originally on the street that would arrive on scene and not know how to communicate with someone who has experienced a mentally ill psychotic episode or was in a mental illness crisis or any kind of a crisis, really, because crisis intervention could be used with inmates, it can be used with your family, it could be used with anybody that you come in contact on the street. The skills we teach are, you know, excellent in dealing with any kind of crisis you come in contact with. With that, CIT was put into corrections for that same reason. But CIT is a coordination between the crisis intervention team officer, the family members, the advocates for mental illness, and it's a team aspect to where you're not just dealing with inmates one-on-one. You have many resources that you can pull from and many resources that can give you information on how to deal with this individual to get them the help they need. It's a short-term fix so you can move them on and get them to the real help they need to get some kind of a recovery process started.
So I find that interesting. So I know that we've gotten emails and phone calls from family members of inmates, and some of them are like, hey, look, you don't know my son like I do. He has had this mental issue throughout his entire life, and I know some of the things that can help calm him down kind of thing. So now you're saying that we actually work with those family members to learn that?
As a counselor, I actually did receive phone calls from family members, and we appreciated that. As you were saying, they would say, you know, I understand that my son is in your facility, and first they would apologize to me. Mm-hmm. They would say, I'm sorry that you have to deal with him. And, you know, they said, we know how difficult he could be because we've lived with him for X amount of years. So they have struggled with the same problems we're struggling with at home that we're struggling with now as he's in the facility, this inmate.
Right.
But they were able to actually give us, like you were just mentioning, great information on some of his triggers, mm-hmm. Things that help us to de-escalate him, stuff that we could talk about to make him want to do his programming and try to everybody working on the same page to try to get him to a place of wellness, basically.
That's great, because CIT is really, I would think that the training is more general, but you're dealing with, you know, 46,000 individuals in our SCIs, and each one is different. So they all might have different triggers and different things that can help. So that's great that you take that into account and use that information. And then the other thing that I did want to mention for our listeners is that 33% of the DOC's inmate population is on the mental health roster. That means they're receiving some sort of mental health services within our institutions, and about 8 or 9% of our inmates are seriously mentally ill. So I think that's an important note for people to realize, is that we do have a lot of individuals who have mental health needs, and finally the DOC is getting around to actually looking at the individual person and looking at their actions, and not just looking at their actions as maybe a negative behavior that might throw somebody into the restricted housing unit. They're actually looking at, okay, wait, this is not a behavior issue. This might be a mental health issue.
Dealing with mental illness on outside of corrections, I live with mental illness. My daughter is bipolar. So I've been dealing with it on the outside of corrections for a long time. And we're very fortunate now in corrections, because corrections is going toward mental illness rehabilitation. What people don't realize is inmates get better psychiatric care inside our facilities than family members can get on the street. Mm. To wait for an appointment on the street, you may have to wait 4 months to see a provider. Our inmates have access 24 hours a day to mental illness providers, psychiatrists, psychologists, CIT trained staff that are, you know, 100% invested in taking care of any crisis that comes up. So they get better psychiatric treatment inside our facilities than on the street, which is great for what the DOC is doing right now. I mean, we are leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else in trying to deal with this population that we were, you know, pretty much thrust upon us in mass quantity. So they're doing a lot of great things in corrections. So I have to give the DOC a lot of kudos in that aspect. So
great. Thank you. Okay, so tell us again how many DOC employees have been trained in CIT, and exactly who can be trained in CIT, and how does mental health first aid training play a role in this, if it does at all?
Okay. First of all, that we have right now 2,145 staff members that have been trained so far in crisis intervention training. We do keep a running total of each facility specifically. I know how many individuals at each facility have been trained. We try to, on a monthly basis, we have a class on a monthly basis where we train 35 people per class, and we pull them in from all over the state. And the reason we do that is so that they can also, while going through this training, see that they're not the only employees dealing with the frustrations of mental illness in their facilities. They hear from other people in other facilities that are dealing with the same problems, and it makes them realize that they're not alone. Mm-hmm. That's why we don't do training at a facility. And the other reason we don't do training at a facility is because when you get 30 like-minded individuals in the same room, and you have a handful that are disgruntled or really don't buy into the crisis intervention training, it corrupts the rest of the training.
Right.
So we bring down people that are assigned to specialized housing units, such as our residential treatment unit,
okay,
special needs unit, the behavior modification unit, the diversionary treatment unit, all of our specialized units that deal with mental illness. They are the first staff that we try to get involved in training. The training coordinators at each facility will recognize the staff that need to come down and put them on a list so they can get down here and get trained, because they're dealing with these individuals all during their shift. There's no break. So after we get all of those trained, we do bring in other employees from around the other facilities, because you could deal with mental illness, let's say, in the chow hall, mm-hmm, in the yard, mm-hmm, because there's mentally ill inmates all throughout our facilities. Right. They're not just in one area.
And when you talk about the employees specifically in one of those special housing units, are you talking just corrections officers or anybody?
we bring down all staff. We bring down everyone from corrections officers. We have deputy superintendents that take the training, psychologists. So everybody that works around the mentally ill is able to come down, and anybody that works in corrections is able to come down. It's just we try to focus on the specialized units first,
because
okay. that's where the greatest need for training would be.
Right.
But we encourage everybody to come down, because where we get the buy-in for training isn't just at the facilities. It's the CIT training could be used at home.
Mm-hmm.
I use it at home all the time. As I mentioned with my daughter who's bipolar, I use crisis intervention training all the time, so it could benefit everybody.
Well, that leads us into my next question, which is, can you give us some real life scenarios where you've seen CIT used?
One scenario that I've actually used in the facility is we had an inmate that climbed up to the top tier of one of our housing units and was going to jump. He was an inmate that has previously jumped at another facility.
Wow.
So we knew he was serious and capable of, you know, following through on his attempt. So I was a sergeant at that time on our special needs unit, and I began speaking with him, trying to de-escalate him. And we are very fortunate because the Department of Corrections not only has CIT staff trained, they have certified peer supports on our housing units now, which are inmates
mm-hmm.
that are trained in talking with inmates, de-escalating inmates, trying to just relate to inmates on their level, because who else could relate to an inmate that's incarcerated but another inmate?
Correct.
Better than I could.
Yeah.
So I happened to see one of my peer support people in the cell behind the inmate. So we kind of made eye contact. He knew what I wanted him to do.
So he was looking through his door, through the window on his door?
Yes, okay. He was directly behind the individual on the railing. And
the guy was actually up on the railing?
He was standing on the railing. He actually was smoking a cigarette, and he said, "Sarge, when I finish this cigarette, I'm going to jump."
Mm.
So we knew we had to act quickly. And the corrections officers that were coming up both sides of the steps could not reach him in time if he was to jump. So it was kind of a standoff.
Wow.
So the inmate behind him in the cell, we made eye contact. He figured out what I wanted him to do. I had the officer at the desk open his door, and the inmate came out and grabbed the individual off the railing and pulled him to the ground, which allowed our corrections officers to come up and secure the inmate for his safety. And they escorted him to the psychiatric observation units to make sure that he was safe. So,
wow. What an incredible story. Wow. It's like everybody was at the right place at the right time. Had that peer support specialist not been there, who knows how that might have turned out.
Right. And crisis intervention training is fantastic, but it does not work all the time. And that's the sad thing. People still do, in our facilities, complete their suicide attempts, and that's sad. And we're trying to really limit that number with all the training that we're providing the staff.
Right.
But again, at home you can use this. I had a very rough year in 2018. I had a brother-in-law in June that committed suicide.
No, I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. And then 2 weeks later, my sister attempted suicide due to dealing with the trauma.
Oh.
And then in last year in November, my son, who's 15, his best friend in high school committed suicide.
Oh.
So we've been around it in 2018 a lot. And it's so sad to see the family members that are affected by all of this. And another thing we get the buy-in for with CIT when our staff comes down is they understand that we try to teach them that inmates are human beings. And for so long, we've done a us against them kind of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that way. You know, anybody can become an inmate tomorrow. You know, everybody's done things wrong that they are glad they didn't get caught when they were younger.
Right.
So I try to instill that into them, that they're no different than anybody else. They're just somebody who made a mistake and they're incarcerated. And now it's our job to make sure that they are safe. They don't harm themselves or other people. And that if something were to happen to them, they have family that's going to be affected by a suicide.
Right.
You know, they have children, they have mothers and fathers, and even our own staff are affected by inmate suicide. especially when they're the ones that find the inmate.
Right.
So everybody is affected, and nobody benefits from anybody with self-harm. So
can you give me kind of a general example of, say, maybe a more hard-nosed employee who has changed their ways or their beliefs because of CIT training?
Yes, we get a lot of people that come down, and usually our class is a week long. It's Monday through Friday, 40 hours of training, and on Monday you'll see everybody come in and they'll have this disgruntled look, because some people are volunteers that come down to training and some are voluntold, you know, because they work on the specialized units, they have to come down. And you see their faces on Monday and you could tell people don't want to be there.
Right.
And I always try to pick out that one staff member that I believe is going to be the hard one that I have to, the hard nut to crack.
Yeah.
And by the end of the week, we have had seasoned staff, 25-year veterans, that on Monday I thought, this guy's never going to change. And on Friday, he's thanking us for the great training that we've put on. And they're saying, this training should have been put on. I wish I had it 25 years ago to help me with my daily activities at work, because it's so beneficial.
Wow.
And we have people call us. I had one of our staff members call from one of the facilities, and they said, hey, you know, I tried that CIT stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, what happened? He's like, it worked. And in a way, he didn't want to admit that something that he's learned benefited him at the jail.
Right.
But he said, I thought it was a fluke, so I tried it again. Yeah, it worked that time too. And then he hung up on me. He didn't even say thanks or anything. It was just like he wanted to let me know that it worked. And it's funny, because I know the way he sounded, it was kind of, he was proud of himself that he used it.
Right.
Because he's not the kind of person, I don't think, in the past that thought he would have.
Wow.
But he saw the benefits, and it's nice because we get those reports all the time. We get emails from all over the state of people that have used crisis intervention training. One of our adjuncts that came down this week to train, he texted me Wednesday night and said, I just had to use CIT at the shopping mall.
Oh.
He said a lady was outside roaming around in traffic, and she seemed like she was mentally ill. And he said he de-escalated her, spoke to her, and calmed her down until her family could come and get her.
Wow.
So that was just this past week. And with the world the way it is today, you never know when you're going to have to use CIT on the street.
Wow, that's true.
And when you're in the facility, sometimes, even though the Department of Corrections has gone in a great direction with the implementation of OC,
which is pepper spray for our listeners,
which is another tool we have on our belt that could help us restrain violent inmates. And I also teach AMAC, which is Assault Management Application and Corrections. All of these tools the Department of Corrections has implemented for our benefit and for our safety. Sometimes if you're in a situation, none of those are going to work, especially if you're outnumbered, which the corrections officers are always outnumbered inside of a facility. And the only thing you're going to have is your ability to speak,
right,
your ability to de-escalate, and your communication skills, which is sad these days with the way everybody texts. People are getting away from communication skills, and it really needs to be at the forefront and not forgotten about, because it's the most important thing when dealing with anybody in crisis.
Right. So. I think, too, the one thing that probably helps with your providing the training to people is the fact that you walked the walk. You were an officer. You have experienced this. So I think that says a lot about you and the success of the program. So I wanted to mention that. So is there anything else about CIT that you want to talk about that maybe I forgot to ask about?
No, I would just say that, you know, it's a 5-day course. We teach a lot of the basics. We teach a lot about what mental illness is. We teach about medication and side effects, because they're red flags that our staff need to know when it comes to inmates on or off their medication. We teach a hearing voices piece, where the officers will come in and the staff will come in. They'll listen to iPods for over an hour with a hearing voices piece created by Pat Dagan. And they get to really respect the fact that some inmates can't control what's going on in their own minds, and we have to know how to deal with that as it's happening.
Wow.
We also do a lot with NAMI, mm-hmm. which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness. We have perspective panels that come in on Wednesday. We have one lady, Miss Vivian, she's 92 and she comes in every month and she speaks to our class about living with a person with mental illness. Her son is, I believe, 63 and she's lived with him and her story. Wow. So they get an idea of the family's perspective. Mm-hmm. Then we have consumers. We had a lady come in last month and speak to the class about being mentally ill, going through our system, being incarcerated, going through the hospital system, and officers don't get to see that side of it. So they get to really put a human factor to the inmate population instead of just inmates, you know? And that's what we're trying to get across, that they're people, and if you talk to them like that, you'll get a lot more done for them and you'll be able to help them a lot more.
Right.
And then we do a lot of scenario-based practice where the whole class is required to be involved. The adjunct instructors dress up as inmates and we try to make it as realistic as possible. And all of the scenarios we use are taken from our extraordinary occurrence reports. They are stuff that happened in the Department of Corrections in the past. So none of our stories are made up that we use. None of our scenarios are made up.
Right.
It's stuff that officers deal with on a daily basis and they have to de-escalate us. And we make it as hard for them as possible because it's practice. Just like anything else, it's repetitions. And some people don't know how to open a conversation with people. They don't know how to start a dialogue with somebody who is mentally ill. So the more they practice, when it happens to them in real life, it'll be just like clockwork and they'll be able to kick in and do what they have to do. So, and then Friday is a fantastic day because we talk about staff wellness. You know, for far too long in corrections, we always take care of everybody else, but nobody ever asks who's taking care of us. And so we do a whole day dedicated to just staff wellness and making sure that if we need help, not to be afraid to reach out, that it's not degrading, that it's not a stigma anymore. Reach out and get help. I joke around because I said if I was in a facility, I'd be a C stability inmate because I am currently under medication and psychiatric, I take counseling, you know, and it's some of it is from corrections. You know, we see our PTSD rate is higher than Iraqi war veterans, and it's sad because we see these things on a daily basis. And they affect us whether we believe they do or not.
Right.
We're not, when you work in corrections, you're not the person you were when you started in corrections. It changes you. And if you don't deal with that, it will tear your family apart. And, you know, we're the highest rate for divorce, alcoholism, dependency. And nobody takes that into consideration when they work there. They just go through their day to day and they just say, okay, I'm just gonna get through today and that's it. And we have staff members that are committing suicide at an alarming rate.
Right.
So it's something we need, it's an epidemic we need to look at. So Friday, we do nothing but talk about ourselves, try to let everybody know that there are outlets, such as the COVER program, and which is Corrections Outreach for Veterans and Employee Restoration, and CISM, and the SEEK program. There's so many outlets, and we also give our personal information out to them so they could reach out and contact us at any time.
Nice.
We've seen at the end of class, we always have participants come up, they shake our hands, and either they'll say that they've had problems in the past and they finally reached out for help, or they say, thank you so much, you know, I've been dealing with whatever they've been dealing with, and where can I go for help? So the problem is widespread. It's just people are afraid to speak up, and we're trying to get that voice heard as well. So
excellent. I do want to point out that over the last couple of years, the department has really been focusing on employee wellness, and I think we're going to see more and more initiatives around that. And I think it's also important to remind everybody that, you know, you have to take care of yourself first before you can provide care to other people. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't help somebody else.
And that's one of the things I say to them. I said, if you're not in a place of wellness, even with your family, how can you help your family if you are not in that place? You know, your mind isn't clear. You don't believe in it. And like I said, when my son experienced his friend's death, my son took it extremely difficultly. How can I tell him to go to counseling or to take medications if need be, if I'm not willing to reach out for help, or if I'm too much of a man, let's say, to I don't want that stigma on me. So I can't teach my son to do the right things or my family to do the right things if I'm not willing to step up and help myself. So it's kind of a lead by example thing, even with your family.
Right.
You know, teach them the right way. Teach them that there's people out there willing to help. So.
Wow. I mean, you're quite an individual, and I'm very happy that you were able to help us, educate us about this program, and I look forward to maybe even attending it myself at some point. And I do encourage anybody out there who is interested or to sign up to attend, volunteer to attend this. This is a very important program, and I thank you for taking time to join us.
No, thank you, sir. I appreciate being here.
Again, thanks for giving us the lowdown on Crisis Intervention Team training. Listeners can learn more about the Department of Corrections by visiting www.cor.pa.gov. That concludes this episode of Lockup Lowdown. We'll see you next time.